and welcome to another episode of To Be Perfectly Honest. This is Twin Peaks, The Return, Episode 9. I'm Corey.
I'm Anel.
And let's get into it. So what did you think about this episode? A little bit easier to understand and process, wouldn't you say, Anel?
Hell yeah, I was glad it wasn't Episode 8 again.
I was watching it with my boyfriend. He actually had the audacity to say, this is a little boring. I'm okay with this.
I lost my boyfriend at episode 8.
There were some interesting things in this one, though, for sure. So, to pick up where we left off, essentially, the only thing that really made sense last episode that we saw was we had Evil Coop basically got shot, was left for dead, and we knew he probably wasn't dead, but we didn't know what the status was for him. So on this one, we see that Coop is fine and he's walking around. He looks like shit. holy crap.
I actually think the mullet has improved since the gunshot wound to the lower abdomen.
Oh yeah, it's like texturized. It looks great.
Now, if only he took this do-rag from off the side of the fence and just attached it to the top of that mullet.
Yeah, he looks like death chilled over,
which I guess. What do you think that was about?
What?
The red handkerchief that he grabbed from off the fence.
I think it might have been signaled as this is the farm. Because are we agreeing this is the farm, or is this like a stopping point
before
the farm?
I'm thinking it was the farm because...
That's what I was thinking.
There was actually a farm.
There. That does make sense. Did you like how you said, oh, there's definitely a forest here last episode, and they're in literally Mexico?
That was a forest.
The Mexican forest.
That was a Mexican forest.
Oh, okay. I forgot. And instead of trees, there's sand.
There is no sand. There were rocks, and that was a forest.
And dust.
All right, whatever. Fuck you, Tim.
Bitch. Fuck you, Tammy.
Fuck you, Tammy.
Yeah, she says basically, oh, the boss man's here. So we definitely are having confirmation that Cooper is the big man here. There's not anyone else above him right now. He's calling the shots. And yeah, I agree. I think this is the farm as well. So anyways, back on that plane, we have Gordon comes, squeezes the shoulder of Diane. She seems very uncomfortable and weird about it. And he does it over and over and again.
He does it, 9 or 10 times, I counted.
Yeah. If she wasn't uncomfortable with it, she would be at the end.
No, I think there was some sort of,
like we're going.
Yeah. I don't know. It was almost like Morse code. I don't know Morse code and I didn't look it up, but like SOS.
This is our secret. I mean, they have weird codes, but this could be maybe, hey, if we're ever in a situation. You need to know Morse code. I will squeeze you through your shoulder. So one other thing here, she checks her phone and it says blocked. So I'm not sure how this is blocked, if the FBI is blocking it, if it's because they're in the air, theoretically.
It's because they have poor service from their phone provider.
I always see that with my telephone provider. So Gordon also says that they want to take a look at an old Cooper case. And she says a Blue Rose case. So we have that Blue Rose coming up again.
Everybody knows about Blue Rose.
And then, she looks at that phone really anxiously. So she's expecting something. Murphy calls Warden Murphy and says that, you know, Cooper has escaped. So now they know he's on the run. Okay, so Evil Coop messages an unknown caller on a pink flip phone around the dining room table. Conversation is lively. He then picks up the phone and calls Duncan Todd back in Vegas, so he's the guy that's in that boardroom, and says, is it done yet? And Duncan says no, and he says, it better be done again next time I call. And he says, okay. So he calls in Roger, and then we go back to Coop, and Coop gets a couple of guns from the people he's with, gets that truck, and then he tells Chantel they need to kill the warden. His name is Murphy at Yankton Prison. So that's the guy that let him go. And then, he said, after you're done with that, we're going to need to do a doubleheader in Vegas. So, and then he throws the phone on the ground and says, kill that phone and clear out.
It is an Alcatel flip phone. Now My first thought was that it was a burner phone, so why would you get an expensive phone? But notably, you look around the rest of the episode, people have, like, nice shit. Like, Apple is all over the place. So, I know you like to stay on target. So, I just want to point that out so that later when it comes up, I can show you what I found interesting.
I think it's... And I haven't thought too much about this, but just spitballing here. It seems like a lot of the technology that Cooper uses is this weird, like, not ancient, but it's a little bit older, and it seems a little bit more analog kind of thing, if that makes sense. We saw that on the laptop. We saw that on the phone a couple times. Yes. We've seen that with the prison. When we go to that prison, at Yankton Prison, remember, we didn't see state-of-the-art, like, digital security. We saw, like, a lot of knobs and buttons and bulbs. And Cooper seems to have a knack at kind of interacting with those. So maybe that's something to do with it, too.
Yes. Now, you shot down my multiple timeline theory off the bat. Are you having
second thoughts?
Yeah. Are you having second thoughts?
Possibly. I have not thought about it a whole lot, to be honest. So we'll have to see. I don't know. Convince me. Convince me, bitch. Okay, so the next scene, we show up at the police department, and we have Dougie and Janie E, and they're talking with the Fusco brothers. And actually, they're sitting down in the lobby. Who is talking with them is Bushnell, and he's just testifying that, you know, Dougie's been an awesome employee. He's been with them for years. The Fusco brothers basically say, you know, he's pretty slow. And he goes, well, he was in a car accident. And every once in a while after that car accident, he gets into moods like this. So this kind of explains why everyone's writing off why Dougie's acting like this, as it might be normal.
I don't know. I'm not a car accident expert, but the amount of stupidity that Dougie exudes, I'm thinking, would come from a little more than just a car accident.
Yeah. I don't know. If you have bouts in your life where you act like this, like, I don't think you should have a job. You might need the FMLA. Like,
yeah. Corey, I'm going to kick you off the podcast if you get in a car accident and act like Dougie.
Seriously, though. Like, oh, for months at a time, you're just going to completely not say anything and repeat words randomly and look,
I'd turn into Dougie's wife, and you'd be like, podcast. So, yeah, Corey, again about the...
Yeah, multiple timelines. Timelines. Yes. Corey starts to agree with me more and more. I like it.
And maybe get a word in edgewise.
Oh, maybe.
Shots fired. So the other thing that I noticed, not to go back too far, but second watch is when I noticed it, that the woman on the farm was Sheila, and she was the one from the hotel room in the, what was it, episode 2?
Mm-hmm. I also noticed this. I wasn't 100% until you just brought this up, but the reason that I think you are right is actually kind of stupid. She had a bag of Cheetos in her pocket, and I remembered... Now, this is purely anecdotal. We have a coworker who likes Cheetos, and that's the only reason I remembered it. But I saw that in the old hotel room, too.
Oh. Well, you know what?
We're like, she's drinking champagne and Cheetos. What the
fuck? Just reminded me of is the scene where Dougie Coop was going upstairs to Sunny Jim, and he was eating those chips. And he dropped that chip on the bed. I don't remember. Of Sunny Jim. He's never gone upstairs except for one time.
I remember that scene. I just don't remember chips.
I just remember because there was like a single chip that he dropped and it just stayed on the bed scene after scene after scene.
It did.
So, yes, folks, I don't pay attention to big plot points, just chips dropped on the bed.
Anel is essentially just like my dog, Noir. Drool.
Oh, I think I was watching it with Noir.
Okay. So we're back at the Fusco's police department.
I hate them.
What nepotism.
They bother me.
Three brothers all in this police department. What a horrible fucking town.
Like,
This scene is odd. Now, we've already talked about this in other episodes of this podcast, how David Lynch has this kind of uncanny ability and tendency to kind of hang on the moment and make it, oh, so awkward. We saw this kind of with, like, that sweeping scene. We've seen it with a couple other conversations with people. I've seen it with my life. He doesn't direct your life, I'm sorry to tell you. Maybe he will. Who knows? Here we have this, too. This is very awkward. Now, there's a couple things I want to point out, but let's just set up the scene a little bit. So, essentially, we have Dougie and we have Janie E., and they're waiting in the lobby of the police department. Bushnell, who is the boss from the insurance agency, he's kind of going in and testifying, hey, you know, this is Dougie. He's the way he is. He's slow because he was in a car accident. He's super trustworthy. He is trying to get the point across, and he seems very frustrated. Hey, someone tried to kill him. Like, someone tried to blow up his car. What are you guys doing about it, kind of thing? And they're just like, oh, we don't care. We just want to make sure that he's not responsible. And he's frustrated. He makes a fist. And we know he's a fighter, so I almost feel like he wants to do something about it. But he can't. He's, you know, it's not his place. We also have a couple pieces of conversation that is very weird. I'll say that for a little bit. We find out that Bushnell leaves. He goes and says to Dougie, hey, you know, take the day off. When you come back, we'll just be working together, kind of thing. Probably with those cases. The Fusco brothers disclosed that there's no file prior to 1997 on Dougie at all. There's no social security number. There's no taxes. There's no birth certificate. There's nothing. So they kind of assume maybe he's in witness protection, and they decide to go, hey, let's get a hold of our guy in justice. So they're going to check him out. Now, kind of to that point, what they end up doing here is they end up bagging a coffee cup with his fingerprints on it, and hopefully getting DNA and evidence off of that. But there's a couple pieces of conversation that don't have anything to do with Dougie, and I wanted to know what your thoughts were on it. They say, yeah, I got that tire like fixed. It was $239. They also say, kind of at the end of the conversation, the Australian guy with the pliers. Did you have any idea what they are talking about?
No, but I did pick up on the fact that that seemed to have nothing to do with anything else.
Anything that they're talking about.
But it's prime real estate in the middle of the episode, so that's got to be a more to come moment.
There's also, towards the end of this episode, remind me here, there is another kind of weird part of the conversation I think I noted out too. The other weird thing about this, though, is if this was just a weird, like, throwaway line, we're just going over it, why is there actual scene where they go outside and they take a look at the car with the taillight? It's weird. Okay, that's all I got to point out. I don't know exactly what that means. Maybe we'll figure that out. So they take the coffee cup with the prints. They give it to the deputy. And then we get, the deputy says, hey, the palm prints came back. It was Ike the Spike. And then just so happens to be that there's a report that he's off at an off-strip motel. So we found out who it is, and we know where he is. It's like,
now,
that's a little too coincidental. But
do you
okay.
think that Ike was responsible for the other theft in this episode?
No.
Do you know what theft I'm talking about?
No. I don't think.
The theft of all of the Fusco brothers' lips.
Oh, yeah. No, that wasn't.
Where are their lips, Corey?
Oh, my God.
Their lips are stolen.
Yeah, they
don't have any lips.
They play the fat, dumbass, piece of shit cops that can't be bothered, don't even do their paperwork on time really well. Yeah, totally. Okay, so before we're done here in the police department, there's a couple things to actually know about Dougie. So Dougie is kind of staring off into space at the flag, and we hear America the Beautiful, and that goes on for about a minute and a half. And then after that, he sees a secretary walking by, and she has red velvet shoes on.
Another reference to the shoes.
Shoes.
And they're red. Velvet.
And then the electrical outlet starts to buzz.
I just want to point out that from the beginning of this season. First time I noticed the shoes was when Coop went through the electrical outlet. They were missing. Shoes got left. Next time that I remember noticing the shoes were when Dougie was stroking the shoes at that statue. Mm-hmm. Then I started noticing shoes all the time. Not all the time, but then there's this, and then I can't think of the other one. But
to me, what seems to be happening is I think Dougie is starting to put what happened when he was in the Black Lodge with his past life. So the flag in America the Beautiful. So he was an FBI agent. He's like any other American. The flag is very something that you remember. You grow up with it. You say the Pledge of Allegiance. If you were in the FBI, you'd be, you know, doing all of that kind of stuff. The shoes. I think he's remembering the shoes. And then also the red velvet probably signifies the curtains and the Black Lodge. And then the electrical outlet, obviously he got chopped through there right before he came back into reality. So I think what's happening is he keeps on picking up and focusing on these cues of things that were important in his old life. The shoes from before, not only the shoes that he left behind, he remembers that maybe, but also that was a statue of a policeman. He was a policeman. So, and he keeps on fixating with badges. He was a man of the law. A badge is something you put on every day. So I think it's these things that he's at least there's something there. Is it going to come back? We can only know. Maybe it will take 10 episodes, but eventually maybe.
I hope not.
So that is it for that one. Okay, so we have the policemen Fuscos. They are outside. They take a look at basically the taillight of one of the cars, and they walk in and they get in the car and they head over to go and check out Ike the Spike. So next scene, we zoom in on Ike, and he is drinking, and he is leaving a message for a person he calls JT. And he says, "No cigar, taking medical leave." Then he hangs up the phone. he takes a shot, and then we see that the police officers arrive outside. It looks like they're doing a sting operation. There's quite a few of them. And then we have Ike grabs his suitcase, puts a coat over his hand, and he goes outside, goes down to the end of the hall. Police are there, turns around. There's also police. They say, you know, "Halt, you're under arrest for attempted murder." He puts his thing down, and we see his hand is in a huge cast. So it got pretty fucked up from Coop.
Yeah, well, you take a chicken cutlet out of someone's hand.
Yeah, that's, I mean, if you look at his little hands... That's a lot.
Yeah, that's...
a lot. That's, you know, bad. Another thing I noticed is he looks like maybe he's doing meth. Did you notice he has, like, a pockmarked face and, like, really gross zits? Like...
Oh, like maybe he's doing some of the sparkle.
He's sparkling.
Sparkling personality. Yeah.
I'm not sure, but it does seem he's not... He's drinking nonstop, like some murder... I don't know. Maybe he's doing drugs.
Well, or he could be doing a podcast, because I've really amped up my drinking. Cheers.
Okay, so we go back to things going on in Twin Peaks, and we have Lucy and we have Andy, and they're basically trying to pick out a color of a chair. Now, there is a red chair and there is a beige chair. Basically, they're going back and forth. Lucy's pretending to make a big deal about this. And Andy gives into it. And then at the very end, when he says, "Okay, Pookie, you can have whatever you want," she goes ahead and picks what he wanted. So it's like she was trying to make this big drama just so she could, like, surprise him. I didn't really get the point of this. I did note, though, and I've noted this almost every time we see Lucy, that picture of her and Andy and her son in the background is the most photoshopped, horrible-looking thing in the world. I don't know if you picked up on that at all.
Yeah, I have.
Drives me insane every time I see it. Okay, so the next scene after that, we come across a house, and we have a woman yelling the off-screen, and then we have a guy running around. He eventually runs into a wall and knocks himself out. Now, if you remember from the original series, this is actually Johnny Horn. So this is Ben Horn's son, who has always had issues. He was always in a helmet before as well. And this is at his kind of estranged wife, as far as I can tell, Sylvia's house. So he's so distraught, he's knocked himself out, and he ran into a picture of the Twin Peaks waterfall. I'm not sure if that has anything to do with anything. Okay, so we have a scene where we have the police department, as far as we're concerned with. So we have Bobby, we have Hawk, and we have Truman. They come in, and they're talking to Bobby's mom, who's also the wife of Briggs. And they basically want to know what's going on. And she is ready for this. She basically goes back and says, there was a time, a long time ago, when Garland came home and said, one day, Bobby will be grown up. He'll be in the police department. He's going to come with Hawk and Truman, and they're going to ask you about me. And when they do, you need to give them this. She brings them over to the chair. She kind of does a little secret thing to it. So she brings out, there's a small metal cylindrical object that comes out. Kind of looks like a cigar case, but there's no seams, there's no buttons whatsoever. And Bobby has a very strange look on it. She says, well, fellas, let's have some coffee. Obviously, this is super weird. So they go ahead and do that. Bobby looks like he is about ready to cry, because that's what Bobby does.
Bobby does it.
We cut from that, and we are back in South Dakota. We have everybody from the FBI, and Diane is basically chilling. They're at the morgue. So Diane lights up a cigarette. We have a couple people in here, and they say, hey, Diane, you can't smoke in here. It's the morgue. And she goes, yeah, it's the morgue. I can do whatever the fuck I want. I'm Diane. Do whatever I want. So she's lighting up, and they're all like, okay, well, let's go look at the body. So...
Did you notice that Diane's shoes are red also in the scene?
I did, but I didn't think that was important.
Oh, well, fuck you, maybe. Tammy.
She looks like she's a Christmas elf to me.
Yeah. Anything significant about the fact that everyone's in, like, dark blue and black, and she's got on bright red shoes, color collar, green pants, purple stars, orange clovers?
She doesn't know how to dress properly anymore because she's crazy. So we have Diane looks at her phone, and we figure out who was this recipient of that text. So the same text, conversation is lively around the dinner table, that was sent to Diane.
Is it the exact same one?
Uh-huh. Around the dinner table, the conversation is lively.
Okay. But if you notice this, it is an iPhone. And if you pause on it, what Cooper sent was in lowercase letters. What Evil Coop sent. It had no punctuation. And hers is in all capital letters. And it has punctuation.
Oh, so you think someone received it and then forwarded it to her, perhaps?
I don't know, but if I send you a text, shouldn't it be the identical text on the other end?
I didn't notice it.
Now, I know you have to do the SOS messaging on Alcatel. Apple's, I mean, you have the full QWERTY keyboard, so. But I don't think it's going to be in a completely different font. It's not called font. Case. Completely different case.
Okay, so Diane gets a copy of that same text message. Now, as Anel's pointed out, it has a different case, and it does have punctuation in it. Is it perhaps because someone intercepted that and forwarded this message to her? Is it just something that was, you know, an oversight? We don't know. More to come.
More to come.
So we have kind of the group and the gang together, and they're talking with the investigator at the Buckhorn, South Dakota. And
last time we were in this hallway, you know who was here.
Oh, just a little.
Blackface.
I was going to say White Walker.
Please don't say.
Yeah.
Please don't say the whites.
A little woodsman. So we have the body again. We're looking at it. Kind of the same old tune we've had heard before. This is a body of a much younger man. It appears that we have Albert, and we have... okay, so we have everyone is around the body. We find out kind of the same stuff that we've heard before. We hear a little bit more about the investigation that's going on. So we find out that we have Bill Hastings and Ruth Davenport. Was that her last name?
Yes.
They were actually doing research and publishing a blog about extra dimensions and that kind of thing. And we find out a little bit more about that later. But essentially, they just confirmed that this is the body, the prints are his, and that and we have Gordon and Albert step aside and say, you know, he died in a fire. The body should be, you know, much more older than this.
And what's also significant about the scene is we have all three investigations that meet up in the same place. We have the police, we have the military, and we have the FBI.
Yep.
All here.
And they all seem to be about as dumbfounded as the other. So there's another couple things in here that are very interesting. So I should probably look at my fucking notes. That's why I took them, right? Okay, so we have the more, blah, blah, blah. Catwalk messages, cool.
Why am I so burpy?
Okay, so we confirm that, you know, Hastings was having an affair with Davenport. His wife was killed later by the lawyer, and then the secretary died in a car explosion. So we never saw the secretary.
Who the hell is... Who did Ike stab? Who was that chick?
We don't know yet.
I thought that was his secretary.
I thought it was too, but she died in a car explosion, evidently. And we haven't seen that on screen yet.
Well, if she died in a secretary, who's Coop trying to see? Evil Coop. Remember, he wants to see her secretary, or he wants to know...
No, that's what the other guy... Remember?
Ray?
Yeah, Ray saw the secretary and then killed her in a car explosion, maybe. We're not sure yet, but that's not happened on screen. They were researching and publishing a blog about a alternate dimension, and then we have the crime scene investigator makes a weird comment. She says, he was also marble champion of the sixth grade. And then Albert says, when did he lose his marbles? And then she says, when the dog got his cat's eyes.
So that's another marble weird reference. Cat's eyes,
yeah,
are...
Yeah, but it's also a very fucking weird-ass comment. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, what was the other one? The Australian man, blah, 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 blah.
I think this is, like, code.
I don't so we have that weird kind of thing. Now, they give each other a little bit of a look. I'm not sure if there is a reason for that, but I think it was just them kind of being witty together. Then they talk about the blog. They say that that blog was stopped about a week ago, so about the same time the murder and the body was found. The body's of a man in his 40s. He should be 70, and he died in a fire about 25 years ago. Cooper also showed up about 25 years ago. So, basically, that fire happened. Cooper came out. Garland went into hiding. She brings up that they found the ring in the stomach. And that they need to talk to... And then the investigators say that they need to talk to Bill Hastings.
So, if he was in hiding the whole time, when would he have gotten that ring in his stomach?
We find this out later. We'll talk about this in a second. But, we'll talk about this in a second. Next scene, we have Jerry Horn is out in the middle of the woods, and he has his foot.
This is my favorite scene of the whole series.
I am not your foot! this is what I have written down next to this. How much weed do you have to smoke in order to get like this?
There's not enough.
Okay, that's what I came to. And then, what are you taking in the woods?
He's taking that sparkle.
Dude.
That's what seriously. That sparkle do to you. Someone has laced his weed with sparkle.
Sparkle paper towels?
Mystery solved.
He ends up touching his foot after a long sequence, and then freaks himself out so much that he, like, does a somersault. And that's the end of that. So he evidently is still in the woods.
And no one seems to care. It's like, how long does he have to be gone?
And while, evidently.
Oh, Jer. He's scared of his foot.
More two.
Oh my gosh. If you guys have ever seen Christian Slater and pump up the volume, he's in front of me.
Why are you? I wish I looked like Christian Slater. Christian Slater isn't fat.
Stop it. Neither are you.
Okay. This one I can read, actually. That's the good news.
What?
Okay, so after that, we have Truman and Hawk and Bobby, and they come back, and Chad, now, we all know about Chad and this little drug operation in the background. Oh, we all know about Chad,
right.
But Chad is eating in the interview room, and he shouldn't be, but he's also eating, like, 3 TV dinners.
I mean, who does that?
I mean, that's fine, but when you're literally in the police department and the sheriff's like, don't do that, you would think you would follow it. He seems like he has a real problem with authority. Being a police officer, that seems like an issue.
He seems like he has a real problem cooking, too.
Let's just say, I don't think you're supposed to eat 3 of those in a sitting for lunch.
Definitely not.
So they say, he basically, Truman says, dude, get the fuck out. Like, come on. And he's like, okay. And he, like, gathers up his stuff. He's like,
and then we all have that one coworker.
You're like, Jesus Christ, you're so horrible. Anyways, they get him out.
I bet there's a meme somewhere. That one coworker who, and it's Chad with the 3 TV dinners.
Right.
In the way.
That's, like, not even making money from work because they're just selling drugs. Then we have, they're in there for literally all of 5 seconds when we find out that Bobby knows how to open it. But for that, they'll have to go outside. So
yeah, because you can't light up your weed inside the police station. You gotta go outside in the air.
We do have Lucy, who makes a big deal about her. I'm on lunch. I'm not even here. I'm on lunch.
That one coworker who.
It's like, okay. So they go outside. Bobby takes the object, slams it on the ground, and then it vibrates at a very specific frequency, and they all listen to it. As soon as it stops, he throws it on the ground again, and it opens. Inside, he unfurls a note, and on the note, there's a couple of different things. It says, 253 yards east of Jackrabbit's Palace. Before leaving Jackrabbit's Palace, put some soil in your pocket. 10-1, 10-2, a time of 253, 2 mountains. It looks like a full moon on one, a crescent moon on the other, and underneath the crescent moon is that weird rabbit dot floppy ear symbol we saw on that card.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
So we find out this is 2 days from now, so it must be the end of September. And Bobby knows exactly where this is because it was a place that he let his imagination go with his father.
Jackrabbit's Palace.
And everyone says, okay, well, we're going to go up there. There's another piece of paper behind it. So it's a bunch of random codes with slashes. And on 2 of the random codes, it's actually...
Cooper.
And we actually know this from the original series because this was actually given to the sheriff.
Whoa, Truman. This is recycled paper.
Yeah, this was...
Showtime has a bigger budget than this.
Well, it was meant to be... Basically, there was a radio listening post from the military, and it was listening... Originally, they said it was listening in on space, and they found this. But it turns out that was actually coming from the Earth. So that was weird. And I think before, it actually had 3 Coopers in it. But I'm not sure. Mm. I could be wrong about that. Don't quote me. But yeah, main thing is that we have 2 Coopers on there. So that is the end of that scene. As far as we know, they're going to be going up there. So what did you think about this? What do you think this has to do with?
Well, I think obviously this is going to take them to the portal to do transdimensional travel. So they're going to be in one of the lodges. And I have a feeling that Cooper, Evil Coop, is on his way there too. Because there's a very specific time frame that Evil Coop is on too. And I think I'm pretty sure he mentioned it somewhere else. I don't remember in what scenario, but didn't he tell Duncan Todd that he had 2 days to, like, kill someone, mm-hmm. and this is 2 days from now?
Yeah, so we have a lot of stuff going on here. Now, the original series, basically, we had a serial killer who was trying to get into the Black Lodge. And so this kind of same thing happened. He had a place he had to be at a certain time, a certain window. So this seems to me like it's definitely what you were saying. Someone's trying to get into one of the lodges. I'm going to guess it's the black one, but I'm not sure. Now, other issue with this, though, and we'll bring this up here in a little bit, but a couple people have looked at coordinates that have been leaked on a website. Those coordinates are actually in South Dakota. These coordinates... obviously, if Bobby knows them, they're here in Twin Peaks. So maybe we have the coordinates for the Black Lodge and the coordinates for the White Lodge. Maybe the ones that were leaked are just a bunch of garbage. We don't know. We'll talk about that here in a little bit more. But essentially, yeah, I think this is a portal into the Black Lodge.
And, you know, talking about the vibrating frequencies of banging that doobie on the ground... Now, we've been hearing the regular lodge, like the regular Twin Peaks Lodge with this vibration frequency mm-hmm. mystery thing. Mystery sound. Yeah. Does that have something to do with it? Could the Jackrabbit's Palace be Twin Peaks Lodge?
I'm not sure. They sound a little different to me, but they are fairly similar. Who knows? We'll see.
You heard it here first, folks.
Okay, so then we flash back to South Dakota. We have Diane smoking outside. Tammy and Gordon come out. And we have another one of those classic Lynch awkward scenes where she's smoking and basically Gordon says, oh, well, we're here to keep you company while Gordon and the crime scene investigator go over everything. Tammy is like, I don't want to be out here and you're smoking. All with her body language. And Diane looks like she's about ready to tell everyone to just fuck off. And then Gordon kind of stares her down a little bit, and then he's like, oh, can I have a drag of that cigarette? And he's like, oh, yeah, I remember this. Remember when we used to smoke, Diane? Remember that? It's like a funny little scene. I don't know what we're supposed to get out of it, but it makes me miss smoking. Yeah, very long and drawn out and awkward. I felt awkward even though I wasn't there.
I loved it. Loved that little scene.
So after this, we assume they finish up at the morgue, and then they head over to the prison, and Tammy basically interviews Bill Hastings. So
she's good. She gets right down and dirty.
Right down to the point. So basically she says, hey, did you have a blog called the Search for the Zone? 2 weeks ago, encountered an alternate reality. Was that true? He says, yes. She goes, kind of what happened? He said he found and entered a dimension and they met the major. And Ruth found out Ruth found out the coordinates for this because she was digging through some old military records and she was really good at it. Hastings says that Briggs was hiding and hibernating, but he wanted to go to another place. So they needed to give him some more coordinates, which they found. And that was last Thursday. When they came in last Thursday to give him coordinates, some other people came in. They asked what his wife's name. He said it was Phyllis. They pushed him down, killed Briggs. Briggs' head floated in the air. And when he woke up, he was at his house and Ruth was dead.
So can I say that I think this is Evil Coop?
Coming in?
No, asking what it... Because Evil Coop was the one that killed his wife.
Yeah.
So wouldn't it be possible that the person that got the coordinates was Evil Coop and was like, what's your wife's name? So he could frame all of this and then...
I mean, that makes sense to me. I don't know. It's either someone he was working with or Cooper himself. But yeah, I think... Now this to me... If Briggs was hibernating in a place, maybe he was somewhere in between the Black and White Lodge, and he was trying to get to the White Lodge. So maybe these coordinates that Cooper is looking for is for the White Lodge. We're not sure.
Why would he want to go to the White Lodge? Isn't he a bad guy? Don't bad guys go to the Red Lodge?
I think he escaped the Black Lodge. He doesn't want to go back there. That's what we've kind of figured out. He said that the Black Lodge, he has 2 days before he has to go back there. He doesn't want to at any cost. I think it's kind of like hell. You know what I mean? If a demon comes out of hell, it might not enjoy going into back to hell. So where else can it go? If it stays on Earth, it might not be happy
either. Is that going to be how you feel when you have to go back to work
after this vacation? I'm going to burn it down. So then she has kind of a rap sheet, and she says, can you identify Briggs? He circles the correct one. She says, can you kind of sign and date it for proof? And then...
Did you notice the date that he signed?
No.
It wasn't... It was, like, 9-something. And then...
Yeah, that's when... That's what it is, 9:31 or something. So, identifies Briggs. He says that they gave him the numbers for the coordinates. He started to float up. And then he said, Cooper, Cooper. So we have Cooper, Cooper again in this episode. And Briggs said it right before his head disappeared. And then there were so many people there. So there was more than one. So if it was Cooper, there was more than just Cooper. Maybe some woodsmen.
That's what I was just thinking.
And then Albert says, fruitcake, anybody?
I think Albert's trying to downplay him.
Albert's always been like this. He's always kind of like the naysayer of all of this. So that makes sense. That fits his character really well. Now, one thing we did want to talk about here is that if you do go to the website, the searchforthezone.com, there's actually something that Showtime and David Lynch have set up that has this on here from Bill Hastings.
Cool.
There is a couple little things. You're the one that brought this up. So
am I? What? No. Give yourself some credit, Corey.
From Reddit. Because you're a spoiler bitch.
Fuck you, Tammy.
So, basically there's a little bit of tidbits over there, but there is, some people on Reddit have found...
Shout out to the Reddit.
There have been some coordinates on there. If you go there, this basically is a fake website that's been set up. There was some Easter eggs and spoilers. A couple people on Reddit have found that there are some coordinates if you basically go to the bottom of it and hover your cursor over. Now, those coordinates are in South Dakota. So, this is the coordinates that I was talking about earlier in the episode. Perhaps there's coordinates here for the White Lodge. Maybe the coordinates that we've seen in Twin Peaks on that piece of paper by Jackrabbit's Palace. Well, it's not coordinates, but Jackrabbit's Palace itself. Maybe that's for the Black Lodge. We're not sure. And it could be that that's just a random thing. But I wouldn't think they would put coordinates on there for nothing. Okay, so then we go back to the Great Northern. And we have Ben Horn and Ashley Judd, or Beverly. And they're still searching for this noise. So... evidently, all they do is look for this noise. Although, I must say, that would be really annoying. I don't know if I could work there.
I don't know if I could handle someone always searching for where the noise is coming from.
Just be insane.
Crazy people.
Pretty much. We have this awkward moment again where she's like, oh, I touched you. Oh, I touched you. And he's like, I don't know if I can do this.
So, how long would you say until these two... get down?
She seems to want it. Ben Horn, like I said, was fucking everybody, but then he turned all good and not good, but like was like all honest. So we'll see. I mean, he's old.
He's boring.
I mean, if he has sex, he might end up like Jerry. Is this my penis?
Or even better, he might end up like Dougie and Jade.
Yeah. Dougie gets 2 rides.
Beverly gives 10 rides.
Still doesn't seem like there's anything in sight. She does say that it is like a monastery bell or something like that. So the allusion is to something like spiritual or like a one of those singing bowls or something like that. Not sure yet. Then we cut from there and we go to the Bang Bang Bar. And we have some weird, dark electronic music. And we have a girl that looks like she's on meth. She's a blonde with, like, grown-out blonde hair. And she's drinking a beer, and she's joined by another girl. They both have disgusting teeth, and they have some weird conversation. So evidently, both of them worked in fast food at the same fast food restaurant, and they open up the conversation. The one girl sits down and says, "That zebra's out again," and then, which I have no idea what the hell that means.
I kind of took it as maybe it's a different kind of drug.
Maybe.
Have you ever had zebra?
I have not. Sounds like a great time.
Should try it.
So we have "That zebra's out again," and then she says, "I haven't seen you in a while." She says, "Yeah, I got fired." And she says, how come you got fired?" And she says, "Because I was high." And she's like, "Well, what did you do?" And she's like, "I don't remember." So she was fucking really high. Like, so high she couldn't even remember what the fuck she was doing. And then she raises her armpit. And she has a disgusting rash. Like, disgusting. Looks like herpes of the armpit. Bad.
Gross.
And she says, "Oh, I got this weird rash." And then they go, "Oh, well, where are you working now?" Across the street doing the same thing. So she's in food service with this rash.
As long as she doesn't stick your hamburger in her armpit.
Exactly right. But then we kind of close with this. She says, "Have you seen that penguin?" So we have the start of this conversation, "That zebra's out again," and then end of the conversation, "Have you seen that penguin?" Do you have any idea about this?
Drugs. My answer for everything.
Sounds about right. So, au revoir, Simone, a violent yet flammable world. And this one, we seem to hover on the song for a long time before we get to the credits. So I just wanted to go over the lyrics, if you don't mind.
Can I sing them?
Yeah.
"And on the shelf, and folded in the ice."
That's exactly how it goes.
I don't know the words. Please cut that out. If you're my friend, you'll cut that out.
It's going in.
Oh, who can't read their writing?
Yeah. Oh, okay. It says, "I don't have to lose myself. It's a whisper. It's a funny thing. We fold like icicles on paper
shelves.
It's a pity to appear this way. You're flying with your frozen eyes. Trace the heights of the city, steaming with the rocks and clouds we breathe. Violent skies, a shock to the body. Speech is wild on the far behind."
She's a Valerian.
That's what I thought. Everything makes sense now. This one seems to focus more on the words than the other endings have. So I'm not sure if there's anything with it. But I'm not getting anything out of it. It's a good song, I guess.
I liked it.
The way the girls sing it is kind of interesting. They're just like...
I have this one... Have you ever heard of Haim?
Yeah.
That's who they reminded me of, and I love
Haim. Haim. We should have listened to some Haim here in a second.
Shout out to Haim.
Haim. Yeah, so overall, what did you think about this, Anil?
About the song or the episode?
This episode.
So there's an ongoing drug theme. We see Ben Horn, who in one of the most hilarious scenes, his foot's talking to him. We also see, as Corey pointed out, telltale signs of drug use on Ike the Spike. He's drinking heavily and his face is all pocked up like he's on drugs. I don't know enough about the guy who was running and busted his head, but he seemed like he was on drugs. I don't know. Maybe he's just disabled.
He's disabled.
But he seemed like he was on drugs. And then the two chicks at the end of the episode on drugs. Sparkle, all these other drugs taking over. So definitely something to pay attention to. We also have all of the investigations coming together finally and comparing notes. Another notable thing is, what William Hastings said about a bunch of people being around when, he was talking to Tammy about the, what was it? When he said that there was a bunch of people around, Corey?
When they were in another dimension?
Yeah. So, could those be the... almost said village people. Could those be the... could it be the woodsmen? I don't know. Can't wait to see episode 10, though. But, ultimately, it's probably not going to give me much more to go on than this episode. So,
probably
more to
come. Probably right. yeah, I'd have to agree. This one seems to be all about setting up, like you said, we have all the investigators all of a sudden are all in one place. And we find out they all are on the same page. They know nothing. Or at least that's what they're sharing with each other. We have a mention of the Blue Rose case again. We're insinuating basically that Diane has a connection with Evil Coop.
There's a lot of secrets. Yeah,
so
there's
we have a lot of inside
secret,
jobs.
Secret text messages, yep. Secret codes. Could it be that those squeezes on, on Diane?
Yeah.
From Gordon when he was squeezing her shoulder. That to me is not. I've never squeezed anyone's shoulder that much. I don't even care if I was giving a massage. It didn't happen that much.
Right.
So.
Pretty horrible massage.
Cooper at the beginning.
Just my shoulder.
Cooper at the beginning of this episode. Evil Coop and his chips and like the bandana. I don't know. There's stuff going on. We just need to rein it on in to see what's red herrings and what's actual clues.
To me, this is how we're getting everybody in the same place. So,
is it the same place or are we in alternate vibrations, alternate universes, dude? Nope. Are we open up your third eye, Corey?
Pretty sure we're
this in the is same a nail place. From the future. I'm telling
they're
you.
They're using Dells.
Don't do this podcast, Corey.
They're using Dells.
Biggest mistake of your life, Corey.
Sounds like it. Jeez. So we have everyone is coming in together into one place. We have all the investigators are finally all in South Dakota. They're all agreeing this is Briggs. He shouldn't be here. There's something with the body. We're in on the Hastings investigation. Before we thought this was just a random murder. Now we see this has to do with Briggs. The pieces of the puzzle are connecting together. Now, where are we going to go after this? We know that Cooper has his prints and DNA that are on the way to be investigated. As soon as those get pulled, that's going to do a ping. Gordon's going to go, oh, hey, the prints aren't flipped this time. This is the real Cooper. So I think that's how we're going to get that involved. Themes for the episode for me, now this isn't really a theme so much for the episode, but just more of like a characteristic Lynch thing. There's actually two of them. One is like the kind of like awkwardly paused conversations. And the other is the dramatic acting is coming back slowly. I think I told you that before. That's my favorite thing about season one of Twin Peaks, the original, was the over crazy awesome acting. Everybody just goes for it. William Hastings here. Probably my favorite performance so far.
Dude, he should have got a
raking out.
What do they give for these things? They don't give Oscars, but he deserved one.
He needs even a Tony. He's not in movies. He needs a Tony.
He needs an Emmy, a Grammy, a good sportsmanship.
Right. A Razzie.
he needs it all.
I love it. I am so ready for some more. And then kind of the third thing is these weird, I would say, so we have these weird enigmatic phrases. So this kind of goes with this little, we have these puzzles. So we have this cylinder object that no one knows how to open besides Bobby. So it's like a little puzzle or a puzzle box. That was actually in the first series. There was a box. No one knew how to open it. When they opened it, there was a key in it. This one, when they open it, they find there's a piece of paper with more stuff on it, more phrases, more stuff that wouldn't make sense to anyone besides certain people. We have weird phrases that are uttered. So we had a couple of them. At the very end, we have the ladies that do the fast food saying, oh, did the zebra lose his stripes? Blah, blah, blah. Is the penguin out again? Or the zebra's out again? Have you seen that penguin? That kind of stuff.
We have the African safari upstairs in Corey's apartment.
Evidently. We also have the medical examiner. She's kind of making small talk with Albert. She says, oh, you know, has he says, has he lost his marbles, and or when did he lose his marbles? And she said, oh, the same time the dog got his cat's eye. Like, what are they doing? Fucking hauling a safe around?
They're moving, following you.
I need to get, my next purchase is going to be like 4 inches of fucking acoustic foam, and I'm just going to line the fucking ceiling with it and look insane. So that to me is the theme here, is we have puzzles. Everything to me is like where it's at. Everything is set up, but we have these puzzles still. So we're not going to figure this out without the other pieces to it, but I can see where it's all going. This one was a little bit slower, but I think it's a kind of welcome change from 8.
Hell yeah.
I can see that we'll definitely have a couple of moving episodes here probably to come, but everything's getting set up to where I think we're at least going to get some people in the same place. We're going to connect this Hastings. We've already connected it to Cooper, but I think we're going to get the investigation in the same place. We have Ike the Spike is now in custody, so we'll have to hear what he has to say from it. We're going to start seeing how all these people are incorporated. Roger and his boss in Vegas, they're connected to Cooper. How are they connected? What are they looking for? How does Diane have to deal with this? So that kind of stuff. And that's it for this week's episode of Twin Peaks The Return. Stay tuned next week for episode 10. Make sure you like and subscribe us on iTunes. It really helps us out. And that way you get the most current episodes as soon as they drop. You can also go to our personal website at tobeperfectlyhonestpodcast.com. You can leave us some feedback. Make sure you include your name and you'll get a shout out on the podcast. And as always, I'm Corey.
I'm Anel.
And stay perfectly honest.